The Brewing Network is proud to present Beer Radio that turns ordinary homebrew into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainasheff and John Plisse.
Good morning, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Hallelujah.
How you doing, John?
Great.
Is that coffee kicking in yet?
God, perfect timing.
Woo, flying already. All right.
I have shakes going, so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm a little shaky, maybe for other reasons.
just looking at me?
No, I was, family was away.
You drank a lot last
night.
Yeah.
And so I listened to the Sunday show and had a couple, three, four, five, six beers, seven like that.
You look like it. You drank a lot.
I had a few. Every once in a while, you listen to the Sunday show, and it encourages me to drink for some reason.
Good for the Sunday show.
Yeah. The Friday show, the Lunch Meat show, encourages me to vomit. The Sunday show encourages me to drink, and this show encourages me to brew.
There you go. And you brewed too, didn't you?
I did. I was thinking about this and decided to do some brewing too.
So you listened to the Sunday show, you brewed, and you drank a lot of beer.
Yes.
That's a good day.
Yeah, and that's why I'm a little tired this morning, I think. Yeah.
And no slacking, Jameel.
Yeah, have you ever known me to slack?
Once in a while.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
all right, well, let's dive right into it. We've got quite a bit to cover here. One of the things I want to mention is when you listen to the show, we go through these recipes pretty fast. not to worry. You can get the podcast and you can, scrub through it and, little by little and get all the detail you want. But, there is a site where the recipes from this show are all, available. And that is, Fred's site, which is beerdujour.com, which is www.beerdujour.com. And, one of the really cool things about this site is, and there's a link to it from the Brewing Network site from the Jameel page. At the bottom of the list of shows, there's a link to his site. And one of the cool things about his site is he got tired of going around and finding recipes that were garbage. So he was making up his first all-grain recipe one time.
Nice.
And was just asking for comments on it from people, feedback. And lo and behold, he sees it posted on one of these beer collection, recipe collection sites.
Okay.
And he's like, well, I never actually brewed it. It's the first all-grain recipe I ever tried to formulate, and I wasn't sure that it was any good, yet it ended up on this site. So what he wanted to do was only post recipes that have won awards.
Right.
And, yeah, maybe that's not, the indicator of, great beer, and you could have a great beer that doesn't win an award,
but
sure.
It's a start, at
but
least.
At least it's some sort of measurement to say, okay, all of these have at least been brewed for one, and they turned out, close enough to the style so you can have an idea of what you're getting.
Right.
And so he's been collecting those there and trying to put them in a nice searchable format and doing a real nice job. And, he's not trying to, get rich off of this or anything. I don't think he makes a penny off of this. It costs some money to have the website. But what's cool is he's just doing it to kind of help people out. And so if you get a chance, go by the site. He's got a lot of the neat stuff on there. But, the recipe collection is getting to be larger and is quite good. So we're kind of supporting him by posting all our recipes there for the show.
Now, do you know how many recipes of yours are on there?
I don't know, a bunch.
Like 20?
Probably at least, yeah. So... that's the place where you can get the recipes. Last week, or 2 weeks ago, we covered American Brown Ale as the style. And one of the things we covered was Mike McDowell's fantastic American Brown Ale. And Mike is a great brewer. He's one of the only people that I will, anything that guy offers me in a glass, I'll drink. So if you want to poison me, that's the way to get to me is through Mike McDowell. And I wanted him to come in for the show. He wasn't able to make it in for the show, but you know, he supplied the recipe, and afterwards I asked him to listen to the show and give some feedback, and one of the things that he enjoyed the show, he wanted to reinforce one of the things we touched on. He says, you touched on this, but it's worth emphasizing that in this style, as in many styles, it's best when the malt and hops are in balance. My recipe is the result of many iterations while holding equipment modifications to a minimum and would only be a starting point. Okay? For other brewers, your results will vary. American Brown is a style of and by homebrewers, and I believe each brewer should individualize his American Brown ale. Likewise, I think it should be judged primarily on taste rather than a specific style guideline. It's a style unlike APAs and Ambers where the homebrewer should be able to get creative without getting dinged. I think that's a good point, and I think we did kind of get into that where, it's a little heresy, yeah. But you know, any brown that you know that's brewed in the U.S., yeah, if you're not trying to do an English version, then you know that's an American brown.
But it has to be brown.
Has to be brown. Yeah, yes,
be
has
brown.
To be brown. I would say you want to get at least a little bit of roasty in there, and you want to get a little bit of hoppy in there.
Right.
You know, and then, like Mike's saying, balance is critical in just about every beer. And, you know, it could be bitter, but you got to have some balancing.
This is like a double brown.
Yeah.
It's way up there.
Right. But it's good. It's one of my favorites. And I think if you were to strictly go by the style guides on his, it may not do so well. But it is a great beer. And he's gotten gold in the second round of the Nationals, which is very difficult to do with that.
Plus, so. Plenty in California. So,
oh yeah, dominates places all over here in California. And I've had my American Brown side by side with his, and you know,
his was better.
Yeah, I would probably drink his over mine.
Okay,
and I think mine might be closer to the accepted style, but. You know,
it's more unique or just bolder.
Yeah, I don't know. I like everything Mike brews. He's an excellent brewer. All right, so an email from Larry. Larry writes, Mr. Zanishev, a while back I read an interview with you in Zymergy, and you had stated something to this effect. You would invest all of your time into yeast. I've been doing this to some degree, attempt to reduce my start lag times. However, I've seen meeting mixed results. He goes on to talk about how a lot of other brewers are getting starts within 6 hours. His average start time is around 12 to 24 hours. He wants some dramatic improvement. So he started using oxygen, and he's oxygenating for about 90 seconds. And he's talking about his base recipe of 1062. He's pitching two White Labs vials of California ale yeast at 75 degrees. Vials are very fresh. And he's fermenting in a closet that's about 72 degrees. And he sees active fermentation about 24 hours. So he wants to know, is he underpitching? Is there things to be concerned about? And, kind of my general comments on it. A couple things to consider. One is sometimes people focus too much on the need to reduce the lag time. It's important not to have a really long lag time, but you know there's a practical limit. You want a good, healthy start more than you want a super fart. super fart.
I like that.
I said fart. More than you want a super fast start. So, you know, again, a healthy start rather than a super fast start. If you're seeing signs of fermentation, pressure on the airlock, a bubble or two, within 8 to 12 hours, that's okay. It's really not a problem. That's fine. You don't, you know, people go, oh, it started in an hour. It's like you don't even need that. And it can result in, you know, less than ideal beer. The yeast need to go through some growth. You need to, you know, have that to produce some esters. You need, you know, there's a lot of little things in there. And super fast start is not necessarily one of them. The amount of O2 he's doing sounds correct. About 90 seconds is fine. Anything, you know, a minute to 2 minutes for a 5-gallon batch should be about right. 75 degrees is pretty darn warm. Personally, I think you want to ferment all your ales around in the 68 to 70 degree range. 75, especially as the gravity of the beer goes up, you're going to produce a lot of hotter, more fusely alcohols that can be like solvent and kind of unpleasant. So I would you know, try and go with a lower temperature there. Yeah, it might be a slower start, but again, the start isn't it. You want a healthy fermentation all the way through. Two vials of White Labs in a 1062 5-gallon batch is under pitching a bit. If the tubes are super fresh, it should be okay. But ideally, you want to make a starter. And if that was the case, then you'd get the starts in the 8 to 12 hour range, and it wouldn't have so many problems getting it going. It wouldn't go to 24 hours. One thing to try the morning you're brewing. Make yourself a bit of wort around 1040. Make yourself a liter of that and toss your tube or tubes into that and just let it go. And if you're starting brewing and it takes you, you know, 5 or 6 hours, 5 or 6 hours later, that yeast is going to be in suspension. It's going to be active. You probably see a little foamy head on top of that starter. And this is, you're just getting the yeast woken up. You're getting them into they're starting to, take in the oxygen and, produce the sterols and the lipids that they need to, have, membrane health. And then, you know, they're really ready to get growing and all that. And you take that. After you're done brewing, toss that whole thing in there, and it makes a huge difference. And I think you know, if you do that, you'll get some quick starts. You'll be getting healthy starts, and the beer will be quite a bit better.
What do you think about what they say on the White Labs vials? They say pitch at 75 or below.
I think, you know, if you're pitching a tube of yeast into a beer and you want to ensure that it gets going, you know, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you'll make better beer if you do it closer to your fermentation temperature.
Okay.
I think, you know, you really want to avoid getting, you know, too many esters. You want to avoid getting too much hot alcohol. You want to, you know, really focus on what the, you know, the ideal temperature profile is.
What do you think about pitching cold for ales and then letting it rise to your ale temp?
That's okay to some extent. You need to be careful because if you're doing your starter warm, you end up going into too cold a wort, and you can stun the yeast that way too.
Okay.
All right. California Common. Today we're talking about California Common beer, and you might know of this as steam beer, which is a trademark name of the Anchor Steam Brewing Company. So when you're writing about this, you call it California Common.
Why is it called California Common? Like,
California Common, it's really believed to have been created here. Back in the gold rush, they were, you know, a lot of the German brewers would come over, and they're trying to provide German lager beer to all the thirsty people working the mines and stuff, right, in San Francisco and you know, where these brewers were. And they did not have refrigeration at that time. It was very difficult, and there were no real ice fields close by to get a lot of ice or cold lagering caves or things like that. And so what they ended up doing was putting the beer in open, shallow fermenters and using that to help hold the temperature down. And they would open the windows in the brewery and let the cool San Francisco air blow through and help keep the fermenting wort cooler, fermenting beer cooler.
Were these open fermenters too?
Yes. And they're open fermenters today. If you go to Anchor Steam, they're in a closed room that's, right, you know, super filtered, but okay. They're open and it's part of the process. And what happened was they ended up using their lager yeast, but it was at a warmer temperature. And what happened was it changes kind of the profile. It's no longer quite so lager-ish, and it's not quite like an ale. You get some of the fruitiness of the ale. You get some of that characteristic of ale fermentation, but you get some of the characteristic of lager fermentation. It's very unique. It's called a hybrid beer.
Right.
Ales are lagers that are done at ale temperatures or ales that are done at lager temperatures.
I'm confused.
Of course.
Of course.
Yes. So Anyways, and then there's all sorts of theories on how the name steam beer came to pass. And they were telling, well, it was highly carbonated and it would spritz when they opened the keg. Or it was like, oh, the fog coming in would, you know, do like this steam. And look like steam. Yeah. And, you know, they had all sorts of things. You know, they when they were in the shallow fermenters, you know, and the warm wort would... you know, let off a little steam or something. You know, there's all sorts of stories. But suffice to say, Anchor Brewing Company, they actually saved the style. It was the last thing they were brewing. There was like one account left, and Fritz Maytag bought the company and started cleaning up the brewery and the beers they were making, and they saved that steam beer style. It is steam beer, or California Common, is perhaps the only... truly American style. It is a style created here in the US of A, and it's probably one of the only. And now I guess we could claim like double IPA,
yeah,
all those big ass beers.
Right.
You know, California Common is perhaps the only truly traditional American beer.
Have you checked out their website yet, Anchor Brewing?
Yes, I've been on it. Yeah. I haven't been on it recently. Website. Have they changed it? Or?
No, I just think it's a great website, so people should check it out if they're listening.
Absolutely. You know. Check it out. Great, great place, great company, great bunch of
there's
brewers.
There's a great picture of two guys on the corner, and it says cold steam beer, and just looks welcoming, you know. Cold steam beer.
All right. You like pictures of guys on corners?
Or? Yeah, I do, especially next to beer signs.
All right, so after the break, we are going to get into a little bit more on the style and the recipe for making a fantastic steam beer. Get it all cleared up. You're the one with the attitude. Don't try and make me loud.
This is The Jameel Show.
All right, we're back. We're talking about California Common, or steam beer. If you are listening live, you can click on that chat now button and get in the chat room with a bunch of other listeners.
Or you can call 888-401-BEER.
That's right, John. Smaller size coffee next show. yeah, the 1-888-401-BEER, and you can call in live and ask questions of the show, and especially at the end of the show, last 15 minutes, we like to kind of cover questions and recap what we're doing. All right, so California Common beer. The aroma, it tends to have kind of a woody, rustic quality to it. And that is from the traditional northern brewer hops. You could use a different type of hop, you know, and make it your own. But really, there's really only one true commercial example of steam beer, I think. And you got to use northern brewer. I always use northern brewer. I think it just works. It's there's some reason why that works. You might get a bit of caramel in there, some toasty malt aromas. And, you know, to kind of support and balance out those hops, a little bit of fruitiness, no other off flavors, no diacetyl, things like that, and no DMS. It's a copper color beer, clear, nice head. The flavor is fairly malty with a very strong hop bitterness. Mm. It's a fairly bitter beer. It's firm.
The finish is pretty balanced too, you know, the
right.
Sweetness and the hopness.
Mm-hmm. So. And yeah, you got that malty bitter balance as well. There's some toastiness and a little bit of caramelly in there, and pretty good hop flavor. Especially the fresher the beer is, the more hop flavor and aroma you're going to get. When it's older and it's been sitting in the bottle a while, a lot of those tend to get muted. Medium body, medium high carbonation, around 2.5 or plus volumes, and it is in a way kind of similar to an American pale ale with a bit of extra crystal to it, and you know, superficially
right.
Similar. And the biggest difference being the fermentation. And the fermentation is everything in this style of beer.
Now,
but the recipe is fairly similar to American pale.
I have a bunch of questions for you for fermentation later.
Okay, yeah. Cool. All right, so this is around a 5% alcohol beer, you know, 5.2 or so. I've used 30 to 45, SRM 10 to 14, starting gravity 1048 to 1054. So they give, BJCP gives examples of Anchor Steam, Southampton West Coast Steam Beer, Old Dominion Victory Amber, Flying Dog, Old Scratch Amber Ale, or Amber Lager. But, you know, things I've had around, I haven't had a number of those, but, you know, the things I've had around that really are, you know, good examples, good homebrew examples. You know, when they're right, they're really good, and when they're not quite right, they're not so good. You know, there's something weird about the fermentation, I think.
Would you say the style is similar to like a Vienna lager, or?
Yeah, I would.
But with more hops.
Or an Oktoberfest.
Yeah.
You know, bitter. Yeah, maybe an Oktoberfest back when it was more bitter and more hoppy,
okay.
and you know, with the steam beer yeast.
Right.
Yeah. No, I think that's an excellent point, because again, you know, there were German brewers coming over and setting up breweries, and what they knew how to brew was, you know, German lagers back
right.
then, and that's what they were trying to do, and they were trying to adapt to. You know, local available ingredients and, you know, conditions. So they didn't quite have that fermentation control that they had. They didn't have the cold caves and all that. You know, San Francisco gets pretty warm.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, though, year-round.
Yeah, and year-round. It's, yeah. You know, it's like that, you know, 60-degree year-round type of place. 65-degree. Yeah. all right, so let's go into all-grain. And extract versions of my California Common Ale. I brew a California Common Ale that I think is just spectacular.
It's good.
It's from a guy who like, hadn't had Anchor Steam before until like
yeah, I've
yesterday.
Had it. No, it's just, Anchor's one of my favorite beers for many years. So,
well,
yours is way. I think it's over the top. It's too malty.
It's you're right. I make mine.
Of course, you are Mr. Malty.
Exactly.
So,
I make mine a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
Than the Anchor product. I make mine a touch sweeter malt-wise in order to balance substantial bitters, and I like it that way.
You like it that way.
I like it a little
5-4 zone, huh?
A little more critical or creamy, and you know. So instead of the dial going to 10, mine goes to 11.
Ooh, right? Okay.
Turn it up a notch, right,
Mr. Malty?
That's right. That's me. Don't wear that out. All right, so what I use in mine, I use a pale two-row, about 72% or so. I use Victory Malt, just a touch, you know, 3 or so percent, and Munich Malt, around 15%, Crystal 40, around 7%, and I like to use a pale chocolate malt, which is around 200 Lovibond. And what it's going to add for you is a nice toasty note. And you'd think it would add a lot of roasty and chocolatey, and it doesn't. It's half the color. It's called pale chocolate. I think there's a couple of manufacturers of it now, but I use maybe 1% of that pale chocolate, and it gives you a toasty note. And if anything in Anchor Steam that's missing from a lot of homebrew versions is a toasty note,
huh.
And it's in you know, the product from Anchor Brewing,
right?
And in homebrew versions of California Common, you get the caramel note, and you're missing that toasty note. And I think that, and it's a different toasty than you get from going like say with a English pale malt.
Okay. Aren't you going to get some toasty character from the Victory?
Yes and no. The Victory tends to be a little more caramelly than it is toasty, I think.
Okay.
But you know, that's
grainy.
That's again so, you know, trying to support that that flavor.
Yeah, you have a fair amount of Munich in that too.
Yeah, 15%.
Wow.
Yeah. So in a 6 gallon batch, let's see here. You're going to go with about 9.5 pounds of pale two-row, American two-row. You're going to go with 0.5 pound of Victory, 2 pounds of Munich, 1 pound of Crystal 40, and just, boy, 2 ounces of pale chocolate. Mm. And that gets you the right color and gets you the right flavor profile. And turns out just wonderful. As far as hopping goes, I use nothing but Northern Brewer. And I'll use pellets. I'll use an ounce at 60 minutes, an ounce and a half at 15 minutes, an ounce and a half at 1 minute. And that's with a 6.5% alpha acid. That's 6.5 homebrew bittering units at 60 minutes. 9.75 homebrew bittering units at 15 minutes and at 1 minute. And that's going to give you that woody, rustic, maybe slightly citrusy hop character.
Metallic-y?
No, I don't get any metallic-y.
Minty?
Minty, possibly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got some characters in there. Metallic, I don't think is one of them. As far as... extract brewing, your grain bill, you replace that pale malt with an extra pale liquid malt extract. You're going to need about 6.5 pounds to give you an equivalent amount of extract. And you're going to need 1.5 pounds about of Munich liquid malt extract to replace that Munich malt. That, or you'd need to do a mini mash of that Munich malt. Okay, Munich malt can't be steeped. I see it in a lot of recipes, but it's a grain that needs to be converted in order to get its sugars out.
You know, we sure talk about Munich malt a lot.
Uh huh.
You know, I think more beer should get Munich extract. What do you think?
I thought you guys had Munich extract.
Nope, no Munich extract. We could have it made, so we will work on that.
Yeah, I thought at one point you had Munich extract.
It's German pills. Okay.
Well, somebody has Munich extract. I know that for a fact. Maybe it's Northern Brewer. Probably. Or somebody has Munich extract. Because, you can't steep those grains in if you're doing extract and specialty grains. But it's not that difficult to mash that malt. So Munich malt will convert itself. It takes a little while. But all you need to do is, for every pound of Munich grain you have, and the homebrew store you're getting from is going to crush it. Just it can be mixed in with all your other specialty grains. For every pound of grain you have, you're going to need about 1.25 quarts of water, around 160, 165 degrees or so. You mix that all together with the grains in your pot, whatever, it doesn't matter. Throw a blanket around it or something. When you mix it in with that water, what's going to happen is the temperature is going to come down into the 150 range. You want to be in the 150s. Middle to low 150s is ideal, but anywhere in there is going to kind of work. The warmer it is, the faster it's going to go. You don't want it hotter than that, than the 150s, and you want it really colder than the 150s. So if you can kind of get in that range... and just wrap a blanket around it or a sleeping bag or something. Go off and do something else for 30 minutes or 45 minutes, whatever. Then come back and rinse your grains out just like you normally do when you're steeping your grains. And that will at least get the majority of the sugar, the starches converted to sugar in that Munich malt and make the best advantage of that Munich malt. So if you're using Munich in your recipe, that's one of the things to do.
Yeah. Don't be scared to do a mini mash.
Yeah, give it a try.
Give it a try.
Yeah, don't freak out that you don't have Munich malt extract.
It's making oatmeal, basically, right?
Yeah, it's real simple. It's that simple, and you know, there's no special equipment you're going to need. Nothing that you're not already have available to you if you're using specialty grains and steeping them. You know, maybe some of the steps are a little different for you, mm-hmm. but it's pretty simple and it takes a few minutes, but, that's essentially how, mashing is done. And, so all grain brewers are doing.
Almost.
Yeah. You know, and there's a few other things, details and yeah, you need to be a little more careful, but I think if you're just starting out and you want to try this, it's a good thing to try. Same thing for Munich, same thing for Vienna, right. Vienna malt. That needs to be converted as well. A lot of people try steeping that, mm-hmm. and you're just not getting the flavors and the sugars out of that malt that you would if you do this little mini mash thing.
I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
You keep talking about this toasty character in this beer.
Uh-huh.
What type of grains would you
biscuity
say?
Biscuity.
Biscuity, toasty,
yeah, uh-huh.
you know, grainy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Would you say Special B could be used maybe?
No.
Kara Munich?
You could use a little Kara Munich in place of the Crystal 40. It depends what color Kara Munich. It comes in all different ranges. But
what about Caravine?
No, you know, a lot of those are going to give you more of the caramel aspect.
Okay.
And there's you already got plenty of caramel in there with the Crystal 40 and somewhat with the Victory malt as well.
So how that 1 ounce of chocolate you add, do you really think that adds a lot of toasty character to
it? Yeah, it's amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's a surprising grain. When I first I found it down at Fermentation Frenzy down in Los Altos or whatever.
Right.
The guy, he likes to carry just every little bizarre grain he can get his hands on, so every once in a while, when I was there for work, I'd pass through and go, oh, what do you got that I've never seen before? And I'd get, you know, a couple pounds of everything I'd never seen before and try them. Huh. And I tried this pale chocolate, and I'm thinking, why? What in the world do I use this in? And then I used it in, a couple beers in place of chocolate, and I got the huge toasty versus the roasty. And I'm like, well, that's weird. I didn't expect it to be so toasty and lack so much in the roast area. And then I tried, splitting instead of chocolate, all chocolate, I'd do like half chocolate, half pale chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started using it to color up some recipes that need some coloration. So you might have a recipe where you're trying to get to a certain color level, and we tend to use like a carafa, or we tend to use maybe some roasted malts mm-hmm. in small amounts just to add a little bit of color. Well, I started using pale chocolate in those too. And sure enough, a toasty character comes through. It's on the roasted side of toasted.
But there's a huge difference between toasted and roasted.
Right, but look at it this way: if you have a piece of toast a piece of bread,
okay,
and you try it and it's not toasted, and then you put it in the toaster and you very lightly toast it to where it's just starting to firm up.
Right.
That's got a different flavor.
Okay.
And then you toast a little bit more so it turns like that light golden color.
Yeah.
And you try that's different. You toast a little bit more so it's a dark golden color. It tastes different. You toast a little bit more until it's starting to burn, and that's a different taste. It's all varying degrees of toastiness. That's why there's that little number on the toaster that allows you to change how toasty, how dark and toasty your toast is.
What's the Lebabon on the chocolate malt they use?
That pale chocolate is 200.
Okay.
And I believe you guys are carrying that.
We do carry
it. I whined and complained for a long time. And
we have chocolate wheat now, too.
Yeah. And the chocolate wheat's interesting.
Dunkelweizen?
I haven't. I've used it in that. I haven't found, pale chocolate. And the reason I stumped long and hard, I don't want to get too far in this, stumped long and hard for getting pale chocolate in the store was that, I can't really find a replacement for it. I cannot find anything else that does the same thing that the pale chocolate does. In a lot of other things, you can find things that are similar, or you can kind of adjust this and that and use a combination of this, that, or the other thing and kind of, fake it. You know, chocolate wheat, I think you can use chocolate malt and, it's pretty darn close. There is a difference, but, you're close enough. On this toasted pale chocolate thing,
it's irreplaceable.
You can't. There's nothing there. Huh. How many grains can you name that are 200 Lebabond in that range?
No.
I've even tried the German Rost malt, which is like it's a crystal 200 kind of.
Wow.
And of course that's totally different. But somebody couldn't get me pale chocolate, and they sent me a sack of Rost malt. So I had 55 pounds of this.
And you still have it?
Crystal
too.
200. Yes. Yes. No, I think I gave it away or something. I might have given it down to Coif or something. It's just like, oh my God. So, there aren't a lot of grains in that, Lebabon range. And, I can't think of any other, roasted grains that are in that range. There's the caramelized grains, but that's about it.
Okay.
So it's a unique character, and I keep it on hand, and you'll see it in a lot of my recipes because I really like what it does, especially if a recipe, if a beer needs toasty. This is one of my secrets right here. This is one of the inner circle secrets.
Gave away a secret.
For a long time. it really does make an interesting difference. Now, for yeast, you're going to go with a specific San Francisco lager, steam beer yeast, California common yeast. And both White Labs and Y Yeast carry it. And when we come back from break, we will get into fermentation, how you handle that, and little secrets and tips there.
Now, back to the Jameel Show.
Welcome back. We are talking about California Common as a style, a steam beer it's also known by, which is a trademark of the Anchor Brewing Company. And we were just wrapping up the recipe. And as far as mash temp, if you're doing an all grain version, I like what's my sweet spot?
Oh, I know your sweet spot. One
in mash
five,
temperature,
four.
Not on my body. Oh yeah, 154. Right. Correct. Which is about 68 degrees C, 154 Fahrenheit. And what that's going to do is give you a nice medium body beer. If you're finding yours turn out a bit too thick and sweet, go to a lower mash temp. If it's coming out too dry, go to a higher mash temp. Again, that's just kind of an indicator point for you. As far as yeast goes, you can't make a California common with, California ale yeast or with just your general lager yeast. You really need to go to either White Labs or Y Yeast and get their specific. For White Labs, it's the WLP008, which is a San Francisco lager yeast. For Y Yeast, it's their California Lager 2112. Both of those are excellent yeasts and will do a really good job, and that's going to give you that important characteristic. Now you were having some Anchor at a wedding this weekend, you were saying?
Right.
Tell us about it.
Well, it was on draft.
Uh-huh. And what did you think of the fermentation characteristics of that beer?
It was pretty fruity.
You got some fruitiness out of it, sure.
Well, my palate was kind of shot too, but as more I drank it, the fruity character went away, and then more of the hop character came through. Uh-huh. So
yeah,
it seemed like it was fermented.
And did you get 60s. Some a little bit of lager characteristics in there, a little bit of the sulfury lager characteristics?
No, sulfur.
And a bit of the ale characteristics as well?
No.
It's kind of like a balancing act.
I think it's a weird yeast, quite honestly. So I don't. I would use it probably like a bock yeast and ferment it hot.
Yeah, you would.
But I would.
That would be the wrong way to go. I'm telling you. This is one of those things where I believe in using one lager yeast and using that for all my lagers. Yeah. I really do. I'm not going to mess around with growing up more than one lager. And I repitch my lager yeast. And there's lots of good lager yeast out there, but I like to do that. The one thing, I'll go to the special trouble of making getting a pitch of this San Francisco, California lager yeast grown up in order to make this beer. You can use this in other beers I've heard, especially in a porter, in a robust porter.
What?
It works out quite nicely. And I've had a number of people tell me that. So you could start out with that and then make your, do your porter and then, switch to that or vice versa and make a nice beer that way.
So where do you ferment this? What temperature?
You want to ferment this in the very low 60s. You're going to go 60, 62. I've been to Anchor. And I've seen the temperature of fermentation, and it was reading like 65, 67.
Huh.
Now, that might be I don't know what part of the fermentation it was, though.
Right.
I would recommend is starting out low, around, as low as maybe 58, 60, and letting that warm up. And towards the end, you can let it warm up to 67 or whatever, and that is going to give you some of those esters, and it is going to help reabsorb diacetyl. It's going to help finish the beer off, get rid of the acetaldehyde, things like that. And that would be starting around 16 degrees C and going up over the course of time to 19 degrees C. If you don't want to do that, and if you do something like that, you want to have this controlled. You don't want to just wildly swing it around. You want to start out and then, gradually ramp that up. And that's how I do mine. Or if you just want to pick a temp and stick to it, and that's, you can't be babying the thing every day, then go with maybe 62 degrees Fahrenheit, 17 degrees C, and just ride it out at that. You need a nice big pitch of yeast. This is like a lager. So you really do need to build up a nice big pitch of yeast to have a good starter going.
This yeast seems like you could really screw it up if you don't hit your temperature right, because of the temperature range. It's between an ale, it's between a lager. If you don't have temperature control,
right?
I mean, you'd really want to have temperature control, I would say.
Oh, definitely. Although, what's nice about it is if you have a good, cold, steady place, it's people's houses, sometimes they have an area or a basement where they can ferment things at 62 all the time, and they're desperate for styles to brew at 62. I've seen this before.
Right.
And you can do Hefeweizens, German Hefes. You can do, Kolsches. You can do steam beers. And there's you can't really get into lager territory, and it's too cold for a lot of ales. And, you end up having to, do something to change the temperature.
Now, do you ferment yours in your laundry room next to the door? Or do you do it in the conical?
Yeah. I use a glass door refrigerator.
Oh, okay.
And carboys.
Okay.
So I used to use the small 7.5 gallon conicals, but I stopped using them. The only conical I'm using now is I have a 12 gallon one, and the reason I use that one is because it'll hold a 10 gallon batch.
Okay.
That's the only thing I have that'll hold 10 gallons.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful piece of equipment. It's got the built-in cooling and all that, and it works great. But for your average 5 gallon batch, carboys work really well for me, and they're it's a vessel that's consistent across many fermentations.
How do you like fermenting in a 12.2 gallon conical but only half the volume? I mean, do you notice a difference in flavor as far?
Oh, no, I only do 10-gallon batches in that.
Oh.
And I'll usually put in 10.5 to 11 gallons of wort.
I thought you'd actually add in 6 gallons and just ferment that in there, too.
No, I don't think you can.
Okay.
I don't think it'll work out right. And the temperature probes aren't submerged. I think you need at least, 7 gallons in that 12 to be able to do it. So, yeah, it's nice, and the thing about that is when I do it, then that gives me like 5 gallons of beer to give to Justin and stuff like that. So that's otherwise, yeah, I've gone all carboys, and the reason I used to use the conicals was I had no way of really chilling down the wort to lager temperatures and then drawing off the break material off the fermenter. And what the conical allows you to do is you can move the whole thing to the fridge, and I would chill it, all day or overnight, and the next morning I would draw off that break material that had settled, and then I'd pitch my yeast. And it's important to remove your break material from lagers.
Super clean.
Yeah, well, and you don't people will worry, oh, I heard that you need some break material in order to, it's good for the yeast and all this. And there's plenty of break material. There's plenty of break material still suspended in the wort. But, you want to generally remove it. The conicals are very handy for that, because there's a valve on the bottom. I could just open that, pour that off, and then rather than racking from container to container, which is a little more prone to contamination. So I would do that, and then people thought I was using the conicals to remove the yeast from the beer and all that, and I don't do any of that stuff. The only reason I was using them was because they allow me to do that, and also you can reach inside to clean them, which is nice.
Yeah.
And so I was doing that, and now that I do the Whirlpool chiller, I can chill things down really fast, and I can get down to a lager temperature through that before I get into the vessel and leave my brake material behind and go straight into the carboy.
Your Whirlpool chiller is highly popular right now at my shop.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, yeah. Lots of people are – I get a lot of email from people who have set them up and are just thrilled. You can read about that on www.mrmalty.com, MRMALTY.com. All right, so we have a question from the chat room.
Somewhere.
Yes.
Yes. You want to share that question with us, Justin?
No, I'm doing the John answer for you. So you had Anchor Steam. Yes.
All right.
Well, first question. Let me do the on-topic questions. Then I'll give you just a couple off-topic questions. Does this yeast, being a lager yeast, require as much lagering time as a normal lager yeast, or is it drinkable a bit sooner?
It's drinkable right away. Again, if you control your initial fermentation temperature, even in a lager, if you pitch plenty of yeast and you ferment, you know, at the proper temperature, a nice cool temperature, the resulting beer is drinkable pretty much right away.
Okay.
Talking 2 to 3 weeks fermentation time?
Yeah, on the California lager, it's like 2 weeks.
Chat room wants, if you need to unload any of your conicals, Jamil, they'll pay the shipping for you. Just, they'll help you out with that. They're being real helpful today.
All right. I appreciate that.
Okay. I do have a question from the chat room about one of your other recipes. Somebody brewed your amber recipe, and they missed your mash temp, which I guess is 156 on that particular recipe.
Mm-hmm.
They hit 152. This is from JB Brewer. He hit 152, so he wants to know if this is going to affect the color, body, and flavor of that beer now.
It definitely will. And what's going to happen is it's going to be a little bit drier beer, a little thinner body, and a little higher alcohol. And the only real problem in that, I mean, that generally can be just fine, and it may turn out just perfect. It depends on the individual brewer system. It depends on fermentation, how much yeast you pitch, and, you know, if you got a proper fermentation and all that. And the only drawback in something like that is that, well, you know, it may end up a little more bitter and not quite as balanced as it would have before. But yeah, it's not the end of the world. You know, definitely give it a try. It affects the flavor through that. It affects body through being a little thinner. It's gonna be a little more fermentable. It's probably a very slight change, but I'll bet you it affects color as well. If you were to take some lab equipment, high end lab equipment, and compare the two, you would see that with the extra fermentability, you know, the yeast might, you know, the color might be just slightly different. Probably not directly noticeable, but it could be slightly different.
Or it'll just be better.
It could be. It could turn out just great.
Perfect.
So, you know, sometimes those mistakes, which you do, even after I make a mistake like that, I ferment it out. I, you know, treat it still like it's going to be a great beer, and then I keg it, and I try it. And it's when I try it that I decide whether I'm going to pour it out or not, generally.
See, the good news is he's going to have beer anyways.
Yeah.
So he's set.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll be a fine drinkable beer. That's another recipe that uses that pale chocolate.
Okay, a couple quick questions. Then they would like you to recap the entire recipe as usual. What kind of scale to bale your Coke? You want to know? Which I think you've covered a couple of times, right?
Yes, a Coke baling scale.
So you can just look through the past episodes for that?
Yes.
And do you need to wear pants while brewing this particular style of beer?
I would recommend always wearing something covering the genitalia area.
Yeah, because covering your man region. It's probably a good idea.
Or your Shangina region. there's a lot of hot equipment running around, and you know, not all of it is yours. It's you know, there that you're brewing on, and could be very dangerous that way.
Okay.
So especially if you've been using the highly accurate gram scale. mm-hmm. and then, you know, you don't want to get too out of control and get yourself burnt.
Yes.
So,
okay,
cover the nether regions.
And then actually, last thing, and you don't need to give the description here, but they want to know if you could modify your website to include how you modified your air conditioner to build that cold room of yours. If you could at some point put a description of how to do that. They want to know how you bypass the thermostat.
I know. Everybody wants to know that, and I'm just so terrified of putting that up there and somebody like
electrocutes themselves.
And I'm like, you know, burns down their house, kills their kids, all that.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know what you're doing, don't screw with it. You know, get somebody who knows what they're doing.
Yeah,
it can be dangerous. So I don't know. I might put it up there with a lot of disclaimers, but it's always worried me.
Still in the works.
Yeah. All right. So to recap, what I use to make a California Common 6-gallon batch. I'm going to do a 65-minute boil on this. I'm not going to boil it too long. I like the shorter boil for this. I'm shooting for about a 10.55 original gravity, which is about 14 Plato. And I'm using 9.5 pounds of pale malt, 0.5 pound of Victory, 2 pounds of Munich, 1 pound of Crystal 40. I use just a couple ounces, 2 ounces of pale chocolate. An ounce of Northern Brewer at 6.5% alpha at 60 minutes, an ounce and a half at 15 minutes, and an ounce and a half at a minute. And use the Whirlpool chiller, crash it down real quick to around 60 degrees or so, and pitch a nice big starter of either White Labs WLP-008 San Francisco Lager or the Y-Yeast 2112 California Lager Yeast. Ferment that sucker out around 62 degrees, or alternatively, you know, what I do is I start out, you know, 58-60, and I slowly let that thing ramp up towards the very end. I might be around 65-67 of fermentation, which is 16 degrees C to start and ending up around 19 degrees C. Mash temperature on this, if you're all grain, 68 degrees C, which is about 154, my favorite sweet spot. And if you're an extract brewer, you're going to replace that 9.5 pounds of pale malt with 6.5 pounds of extra pale liquid malt extract, and the Munich malt. They replace those 2 pounds with 1.5 pounds of a Munich extract, or do your little mini mash. Try and keep the grains in the 154 range, and with 1.25 quarts of water per pound. And that's it. Make yourself a good California Common.
Bye, Jamil.
Bye, John.
See you,
everybody,
buddy.
Go out there and brew strong.
Hell yeah.
Next time it's mild you guys are doing.
Mild brown.
Mild. And coming up tomorrow around this time is the Graham Sanders Show out of Australia, one of my favorites. After this, some random show.
I'm going to play Last Jamil Show, actually. I'm going to replay
your
Last Jamil Show.
So lots of good information coming up. Stick with it. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
The Jamil Show has been a production of the Brewing Network. Please send questions for Jamil to jamil@thebrewingnetwork.com. The Jamil Show airs live every other Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Brewing Network.